out there!
Cowboys and cattlemen.
Do you feel good?
Wrapping up a mock and wrapping up a Viva La Mock, a Jerry Reed mock with Me First and the Gimme Gimmes doing their version of Eastbound and Down from their Love Their Country album. Before that was the Pleasure Barons, with Jerry Reed's Amos Moses. Also some Jesus and Mary Chain in there with Guitar Man. Played some Johnny Cash. Good to get some Johnny Cash in there if the Lord's willing and the creeks don't rise. And then I throw a B-side in, an early B-side from They Might Be Giants with Mr. Claw. Had to throw that one in because Jerry Reed was known as the Claw with his picking style. Speaking of picking, how about some Chet Atkins in there with Early Times? And as I mentioned earlier, I start off the entire mock with Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps doing Crazy Legs from 1957. As always, yeah, we're wrapping up a Viva La Mock a little early tonight, but that's okay. We'll be back next week. We'll do it all over again, but want to thank you for listening and always keep listening here to 88.3 FM WRCT Pittsburgh. Shoot me a request if there's something you want to hear at wrctrequest@gmail.com.
Pentecost. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
It is the one-year anniversary of the January 6th Trump riots. We are going to have a little bit of coverage of that later today. We're also going to carry on tomorrow's show. We'll have some clips from Joe Biden's statement, his speech today about that one-year anniversary, very, very heavily placing a lot of the blame on Donald Trump did Joe Biden today. But we'll talk about that later and tomorrow. There is so much else to get to, and I'm going to jump right into it. As many of you know, any opportunity that I have to clear up confusion or misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, or bad math and statistics, those are opportunities that I relish. And unfortunately, the opportunity we have today is to look at a clip from Republican Senator Rand Paul, who, to some people, very convincingly made an argument yesterday, not only against vaccine mandates, but against vaccines at all when it comes to coronavirus. And so we're going to look at this clip. There's a bunch of different concepts here that are relevant and that are important. So I'm going to be making notes of each of the aspects of what he says that need to be discussed. See if you can pick out the fallacious claims, and then we're going to talk about it in more detail. Let's take a look.
And so what we're dealing with is now a different disease, and it needs to be treated differently. We need to get rid of the hysteria. But the people who are promoting the hysteria work for the government. I mean, this is Dr. Fauci's fault largely.
It's the worst.
Because he's still hysterically talking about mandates and shutting people down and not letting people fly and blaming the unvaccinated. Everybody's getting this, vaccinated, unvaccinated. In fact, the majority of the people in the hospital now are vaccinated because almost everybody's been vaccinated.
Now, that is a lot of disinformation, but there's one really funny thing. At the end of what Rand Paul says, he actually gets to something that's really important in understanding the effectiveness and efficacy of vaccines, which is he says, because almost everyone is vaccinated. Now, that's not actually true. In the United States, we have a pathetically, embarrassingly low vaccination rate relative to so many other countries, specifically because of Republicans and Trump supporters who have one of the lowest vaccination rates in any country that has widespread access to vaccines. You can look at countries that don't yet have widespread access to vaccines and say, well, they have lower rates than Republicans. Yes, but they have no access to vaccines among groups. So if you look at, you know, Spanish right wingers and, you know, whatever group you want, American Republicans are arguably, and I think probably undoubtedly, although right up there, the least vaccinated group among any group in countries with widespread vaccine access, and by far the most unvaccinated group in the United States. But Rand Paul gets to something really important. In a country where everyone is vaccinated, everybody with COVID would be vaccinated. That doesn't really tell you anything about how good the vaccines are at preventing illness at all, preventing symptomatic illness, preventing serious illness, hospitalization, or death. I mean, think about that. No vaccine is 100%. And thus, the more vaccinated a country is, the higher number of people who are vaccinated that are going to get that disease. It doesn't actually tell you how much better off you are being vaccinated than not. If you get to 100% vaccinated, every case will be in a vaccinated person. What we need to be looking at are the outcomes and the relative risk. Imagine a country with 99% vaccination and 90% of the hospitalizations are in that 1% that's not vaccinated. Even though you have this high level of vaccination, you would still say you're way better off vaccinated than unvaccinated. So let's look at some data along those lines. When we look at we can look at a bunch of different places. Let's start with Kentucky. You look at hospitalizations in Kentucky as of yesterday. OK, 45 inpatient hospitalizations. 76% were unvaccinated, whereas 24% were vaccinated. Even though the majority of Kentucky residents are vaccinated, three quarters of those in the hospital did not have the vaccine. The relative risk of being unvaccinated is significant. OK, you look at critical care and ICU patients, 11 of them, 100% of them are unvaccinated. So even though Rand Paul might look and say most people are vaccinated and the numbers are going crazy, look at the 11 people in an ICU. I think this is admitted yesterday. 100% of them are unvaccinated. And if you look at the six patients that are on ventilators, none of those people are vaccinated. This is what we're hearing anecdotally from emergency room doctors. The people with three vaccines are having very mild illness and don't need to be in the hospital, generally speaking. There's obviously exceptions to everything. Let's look next at, whoa, that's a picture of me. Don't know where that came from. Let's look at Ontario. In Ontario, you have three charts here. I'll describe them for people that are just listening today. If you look at cases are going up among everybody. Now, these are per capita. So this is important to understand. This is per capita. The leftmost graph, COVID cases, you see that the rate among the unvaccinated is significantly higher than among those with at least two doses. It's going up for everybody because Omicron is so contagious. Now, look at who's in the hospital. The gap between unvaccinated and vaccinated in the hospital is incredible. In Ontario, among the unvaccinated, the hospitalization rate is about 550 per million inhabitants, whereas the rate among the vaccinated is only about 100. You have a 5.5 times higher rate of being in the hospital if you're unvaccinated. And then if you look at ICU, the numbers are even more stunning. ICU occupancy among unvaccinated people is about 140 per million. It's only about 10 for those who are vaccinated. So that puts you 14 times higher risk of ending up in the ICU if you are not vaccinated. Last illustration here is from New York City. Looking at New York City here, you see this is just cases. Cases are going up for everybody, but the purple line is cases per 100,000 among the unvaccinated. It's about 5,500 per 100,000. Cases among the vaccinated are about 300. Okay. 15x or so higher. So Rand Paul is mathematically correct in that increasingly, as more people get vaccinated, more and more of the cases will be among the vaccinated. That's just simple math. It's base rates. But the rate of hospitalization, intubation, and death continues to be dramatically higher among those who have not been vaccinated. This is around the world. There's no country in which this is not being observed. So very dangerous disinformation from Rand Paul, which a lot of these Fox News viewer sycophant types grasp onto for dear life and uncritically repeat. Understand the math. Very, very important. It is the 1 year anniversary of the Donald Trump January 6th riots in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, we'll talk about Joe Biden's speech in which he very heavily, very strongly blames Donald Trump for what happened a year ago. If you can imagine a more brain dead, ill conceived, dangerous action than this, Donald Trump last night on the eve of the anniversary of the Trump riots put out a statement calling for MAGA Nation to, quote, rise up. Think about what they did last year and think about the insanity of putting out such a statement once again. Let's take a look at the Donald Trump statement that he put out yesterday. Let's see if we can get zoomed in on this so we can really take a close look at it. Statement by Donald J. Trump put out yesterday. The Biden administration's response to COVID is getting worse every day. Joe Biden said, quote, there is no federal solution to the pandemic, but he then federalized the distribution of antibodies and red states are getting the short end of the stick. That's been widely debunked, by the way. Although I agree that it was a really bad idea for Joe Biden to run on fixing COVID and then say there's no federal solution, then why'd you run on it? That was a mistake by Joe Biden. In my administration, we respected the role of governors to take care of their own states, and they could request antibodies and therapeutics depending on what they needed. That's the way our capital C country is supposed to run. Now there's talk by the Biden administration again about closing schools and even vaccine mandates for school children. Remember, this stuff is really determined at the state level. So the fact that it's being discussed as whether it makes sense is very, very different than taking power away from governors. Okay. This is an outrage, and here's the key line, and MAGA Nation should rise up and oppose this egregious federal government overreach. This is, now you might see this and say, David, to normal people, that wouldn't move them to violence. We are not dealing with normal people. We are dealing with people here in Trumpists who last year committed hundreds of crimes because Donald Trump said, let's go to the Capitol. These are people who have spent the last year terrorizing school board meetings and places where localities, local municipalities, not the federal government, local officials are discussing masking, vaccination, remote learning, all these different things. And now Donald Trump says to these people, you should rise up and oppose egregious federal government overreach. This is the exact type of weaponization of ignorance and radicalism that leads to real world violence. And Trump is doing it again on the eve of the January 6th riots, going on to say the Democrats are so incredibly mandate happy. And there is a discussion about a vaccine mandate for school kids this year in Detroit and other Democrat run places. Our administration did what they said could not be done. Vaccines in record time. Remember, that had nothing to do with Trump, based on technology under development for decades. But we never issued mandates, and I never would. People should be able to choose how they want to govern their own health. The federal government must be reined in and give people freedom to decide whether they want to be vaccinated or not. Joe Biden said he would never issue mandates, but he did it anyway, like so many other things. So, of course, that's pretty dishonest in the sense that Joe Biden has not issued just a government mandate that people must be vaccinated. He has done things in terms of employment. He has done things in terms of the Department of Transportation, et cetera. You can say it's good or bad. You can say it's moral or immoral. It is not illegal, and it is not something Joe Biden said he wouldn't do. We can debate the effectiveness of it, but it is a lie to frame it in this way. So on the eve of the January 6th riot anniversary, Donald Trump is doing exactly what he did 364 days prior, which is to tell lies about supposedly authoritarian Democrats and encourage his followers to rise up, to go there. And he's talking about rising up against the federal government. That is the exact same thing that they did on January 6th, 2021. I'm hopeful that a lot of these Trumpists now have seen more than 700 people charged for their role last year in the riots because there's a heavy police presence in Washington, D.C. My hope is there will be no repeat, although some of them would love to do it. My hope is there will be no repeat this year. And so far, as of today, that seems to be the case. I want to remind everybody, Tuesday, we will be doing the first David Pakman Show viewer chess tournament of 2022. Tuesday, January 11th. 6 p.m. Eastern. All you have to do for now is join the David Pakman Show Chess Club at davidpakman.com/chess. You'll need a chess.com account. It's free. I'm not selling you anything other than a good time. We've got some great chess streamers who are going to be participating. Grandmaster Benjamin Feingold will be playing. International Master Eric Rosen is going to be joining us in streaming. Women's FIDE master Anna Kramling is going to be participating in streaming. So it's going to be fun for everybody. You'll be matched up against people of your level. My level is very low, but it's still a really, really good time. So just join the club free at davidpakman.com/chess. And then we'll have more information next week. Remember that the David Pakman Show is dependent on folks who decide to get memberships on my website. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. We do an extra show every day for our members. We also offer commercial-free audio and video streams of the show for our members. And when we do viewer town halls like we did a few weeks ago, members get a separate priority line to talk to me. And lots of other great little perks. So sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the new coupon code WOW22 to get a significant discount at joinpakman.com. Let's look at some interesting posts from this morning on the David Pakman Show subreddit. The David Pakman Show subreddit can be found at davidpakman.com/REDDIT. More than 33,000 of our viewers and listeners have subscribed there. First post is concerns over right-wing friends. This is an interesting topic. User Atman writes, "Hey, everyone, as the title implies, I have a bit of a serious issue. Growing up, I had a conservative phase. I was only like 16 and was pulled in by the 2016 wave of conservatism on YouTube and social media. I ended up making some friends at this time with similar interests. We were pretty much your standard, I'm a classical liberal type, watched Ben Shapiro debates, maybe some Paul Joseph Watson, a lot of Steven Crowder. Over time, I drifted away and became a lot more liberal. These friends, however, did the opposite. They're extremely right wing. They think COVID is a left wing power grab, which is annoying, considering I've worked on a COVID unit since April and see it firsthand. Trump actually won the election. Armed insurrection is justified. And I fear they're even beginning to dabble in white nationalism. Our talks have become noticeably more tense. All they do is post guns on their Instagrams and spam their stories with far right propaganda. Is there any hope of helping them? Should I just cut them off? If I was able to drift liberal, could I manage to help them as well? I appreciate the advice." I mean, listen, this is a really, I get calls like this all the time from people. This is a really personal thing. I don't think there's any issue with having friends with diverse political opinions. I have friends with diverse political opinions that include, you know, kind of casual center right Republicans, mostly focused on tax and regulation issues, people who are sort of outside of the traditional political space, but are just culturally very liberal or conservative. But I don't have any friends that are outrageous MAGA lunatics and white nationalists and all these different things, because that is so at odds with what I believe. Those views, often rife with anti-Semitism and xenophobia and all these things. There's no way for me to put that aside and just talk about yesterday's basketball game. There's a sort of line, and that line is different for everybody. The question about bringing them to the left, that's a different question altogether. And it really comes down to, how much work are you willing to put in? When we talk about deprogramming and de-radicalizing people, we're talking about something that can take months of concerted effort, if not longer. As I've said before, I think the most kind of least confrontational way to approach this is to just regularly ask basic probing questions about, how did you come to believe that? How did you come to believe that? Kind of a soft Socratic method of questioning. But it's a very personal thing, what you are willing to sort of endure in terms of getting to that point of having a shot at disabusing them of these beliefs. But let us know how it goes. Another post I spotted, user Philo posted an article about Turning Point USA building the next generation of conservative influencers. Influencer first, conservative second. I have talked for years about how the right is willing to lose money on individual projects, like throwing tons of cash at these organizations that program young right wingers to go out and spread the message, so to speak, because they see it as a bigger investment in the longer term. The right has a lot of views, including on abortion, gay marriage, taxes, healthcare, where if you just ask questions in an unbiased way, you see that the country continues to move to the left, to the left, to the left. But what is the right doing to continue winning elections and controlling the narrative? They are just dumping cash into training up advocates for their perspectives right out of college. And we on the left should be very worried about it. I have conversations all the time with wealthy ish and very wealthy center left people and actual progressives as well. And they say, how can I deploy my resources? And I say, you know, if you really want to make a difference, you've got to fund left-wing media and create organizations equivalent to what the right has to get people to become advocates when they come out of college, because the right has the ground game figured out. And they'll sometimes say, well, what about George Soros? You know, often is what's mentioned. Soros is operating on a very different level. Soros is not doing what the right is doing with groups like Turning Point USA and others. So without a doubt, if the left really wants to control that space and actually work to make the country's sort of public political orientation match that of what people are privately saying are their views, because remember, our elected officials are way to the right of where the country is, we've got to fight them the way that they fight, which is dumping a ton of cash into these organizations. Turning Point USA, it's a vile organization, but they are doing exactly what the left fails to do. Last post was, and I got a ton of these. Anybody know what's up with the subscriber feed on the website? I thought David was on vacation and I wasn't paying attention, but there are new segments on YouTube and I'm not finding the content on the website. It is 2022. So you must, a message to all members with peace and love, you have to go to Member Content 2022 to find this year's shows. 2021 is over. I know a lot of people miss this, but the content is there. We are back. Join the discussion at davidpakman.com/Reddit. We've been covering the growing civil war, so to speak, between the anti-Trump and pro-Trump Republican Party. But the anti-Trump, so-called anti-Trump Republican Party, is often people who were never into Trump. We are now seeing something different. As a result of Donald Trump making really mild, milquetoast, uncontroversial statements about the vaccines are pretty good at keeping you out of the hospital for COVID, a bunch of actual former Trumpists have turned on Donald Trump, and some are even burning MAGA hats. I'm going to play a clip for you here of former Arizona Republican Senate candidate. What was this guy's name? I don't even remember this guy's name. Daniel McCarthy. Yes, Daniel McCarthy. He has completely turned on Donald Trump, is challenging Trump to a debate at the Trump rally scheduled for next Saturday, calls Trump, quote, a little bitch, and then uses a flamethrower to burn his own MAGA hat. This is great. This is great. And I'll tell you why in a moment. Let's take a look at the video. Let's listen.
Hey, Donald Trump, this is Daniel McCarthy in Arizona. The world is waking up to your massive grift. Please stop with the smoke and mirrors with these audits. Stop with your fundraising. Stop establishment candidate endorsements. Stop pushing this gene therapy.
Now, I have to stop there. YouTube has a policy where it's not enough that my audience knows I support and accept the science on vaccines. Every time such statements are made, like the vaccines or gene therapies, I have to rebut it every time to be in compliance with YouTube. This is what's going on. So I want to remind you guys, we have extensively debunked the notion that the vaccines are, quote, gene therapies. They are gene-based vaccines, but they are not gene therapies that change your genes. Okay, I just have to, it's important. I have to do that every time. I'm sorry.
Sauce, I hear you're coming to Florence, Arizona for another one of your do-nothing rah-rah session rallies. Well, I have an offer for you. I will give $1 million to the charity of your choice.
Wow.
If you take 30 minutes of your stage time on January 15th and debate me or answer my questions even in front of your crowd. Think about all the things that you've done that you've not been held accountable for. You ushered in medical tyranny.
That's not true. Donald Trump did not usher in any medical tyranny.
You exploded our national debt.
That's true. He did explode the national debt.
You relinquished our sovereignty with the USMCA trade deal.
That's untrue. USMCA, very similar to NAFTA, quite uncontroversial, certainly did not give up any sovereignty.
You passed more gun laws than Obama did with fixed NICS.
That I don't even know about. I'm not even sure about that one.
You warned about election fraud, but yet you did nothing to prevent it, even after my team, months in advance, warned you after we were stolen from in the Senate primary.
That's just crazy talk. That one's hard. There's so many elements to that one. It's hard to even refute.
You gave up on therapeutics and you push an experimental gene therapy.
And again, the vaccine is not an experimental gene therapy.
People are literally dying because of their trust in you.
Now, that's interesting. People are dying because of their trust in you. There are people dying because they believed, based on Trump, that they shouldn't get the vaccine. That's not actually what Trump said. It's true people are dying because of their trust in Trump, but not for the reason that McCarthy is saying. That's kind of a complicated one.
Enacted the lockdowns and you surrounded yourself with swamp creatures for 4 years.
He did surround himself with swamp creatures. Trump did not enact any lockdowns.
The January 6th protesters that came down to the Capitol, you set them up. Those people are being treated worse than dogs now.
So set up suggests it was, I mean, Trump just encouraged them to do what they did. It wasn't really a setup.
And these are your most loyal supporters. Trump, you failed America.
Yes.
You're the most deceptive president in American history.
That's true.
And trust me, there's been a lot of psyops before. I've posted the terms and conditions of my $1 million offer to my website, www.demanddaniel.com. I look forward to seeing you on January 15th, although I know you won't do it because you're a little bitch.
Right. And so now he's getting out of the truck and he's going to flamethrow his own MAGA hat. So the MAGATs are revolting. And there it is. Well. And then he stomps it out. And then he drives over it with his truck. Yeah. Wow.
Trump won't ever talk to me because he knows he can't, because his family's name would be tarnished forever.
Okay, so obviously this guy's completely out of his mind. I mean, completely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. But the fact that now even Trumpists are turning on Trump is very interesting. Tomorrow, we are going to have a report about Stephanie Grisham, very briefly, the press secretary for Trump. She says there's a group of 15 Republicans getting together to try to preemptively neuter Trump from ever running in 2024. So there's a very interesting counter Trump movement even within Trumpism. We're going to talk about it. You can see the clip if you were listening to this segment. You can see the clip of this Daniel McCarthy guy flamethrowing the MAGA hat on our Instagram, which is David Pakman Show on Instagram. You can also find me on Instagram at david.pakman. It's great to welcome to the program today Jeffrey Kane, Senior Fellow in Critical Emerging Technologies at the Lincoln Policy Network, and also author of the book The Perfect Police State, An Undercover Odyssey into China's Terrifying Surveillance Dystopia of the Future, a book I recently read. Great to have you on today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, David.
So for people who maybe have not studied this topic or have only a kind of passing or a rudimentary understanding of what has been going on in China, in particular with the Uyghur population, maybe we can back up a little and ask the question, what have relations been between the Chinese Communist Party and the Uyghur population, particularly in Xinjiang, historically in China?
So Xinjiang is a region of China that's about twice the size of Texas, and it's on, you could say, the western frontier of what is today China. But historically, it was home to a group of people called the Uyghurs, who are mostly Muslim, and they populated this region for hundreds, almost 1,000 years. This is really their homeland. I think a good comparison would be to imagine, the European settlers in America and the Native Americans, and that's sort of how China looks at this region. It's a place that it's been expanding westward into, and it keeps running into this Uyghur population and these other ethnic minority groups who practice a different religion, have a distinct language, a distinct culture. There are about 12 million people there, sparsely populated area. It's oasis and desert and mountains. And it truly is the place that China has been trying to build and develop with oil and railroads and, turning it into this frontier land where Chinese settlers can go and they can find their riches and opportunity.
So, in terms of the motivations for the treatment of the Uyghur population to be what it is, there are perspectives that say this is mostly xenophobic lines based on Muslim religion. There are other perspectives that say there's a sort of business oriented perspective, as you're talking about, and desires to turn that area into something that is much more financially viable. What is the origin of the circumstances as we now see them?
So there's a lot of origins to the situation in Xinjiang. There are currently about 1.8 million people in concentration camps in this region, which is about 1/10 of the minority population. So, you know, imagine the North American equivalent. It's as if, you know, a minority, blacks or Native Americans or whoever it might be, 1/10 of them being taken away without being charged with a crime to a concentration camp. The reasons for this, many reasons. But it mostly goes back to, you could say, a war on terror just taken to an extreme. You know, the U.S. was waging the war on terror for many years. It's calmed down now. But China seized on that war on terror and took it to an authoritarian system over these people. You know, the Chinese state that they're affected with terrorist ideas, that they need to be purged. And so they created this total surveillance dystopia using artificial intelligence and overhanded policing and facial recognition cameras everywhere to try to get inside the thoughts of every single Uyghur, to predict their behavior, and to try to turn them into good patriots of the state.
Okay, so you mentioned the facial recognition. In the book, you talk about a lot of the different sort of elements of the surveillance state that are in place there. Kind of a two-part question. Can you talk about some of the other surveillance methods that are used? And also, are these only in place in this region, or are these also to some degree in other parts of China as well?
So when I was writing the book, it was starting in Xinjiang. These measures were being rolled out in the region, and they were experimental about 4 years when I started writing the book. Since I've published it, these methods, these tactics and technologies have expanded throughout many parts of China. So Tibet, great example, Inner Mongolia. There are all these regions of China that are home to minorities who are being repressed violently. So to give you an idea of other tactics, just imagine an old sci-fi novel or a movie. I think that this is most like the movie Minority Report with Tom Cruise, about a police force that tries to engage in predictive policing. They can try to predict a murder and then arrest the person and brainwash them. They brainwash them in this system before the murder can happen. That's what's happening in Xinjiang. And data points, and the data points could be things like, you know, whether a person leaves the home, the front door at 9 a.m. every day to go to work, whether they go grocery shopping, you know, every other day at 6 p.m., what do they buy? There are cameras watching them. What do they read? In the case of my book, I found one young woman reading too many books, and there is there are these camera systems everywhere that are watching you and gathering this data and then trying to predict, are you going to be a threat to the state in the future? Are you going to try and commit some kind of terrorist, rebellious act against the Communist Party? And so they take you to a concentration camp, psychologically, physically torture you, and try to get you to resent your supposed evil ways and to become this shell of your former self, where you simply accept and internalize the demands of the Communist Party.
Now, in the book, you describe kind of two different layers. There's the re-education camps and what are sometimes called the concentration camps. And the concentration camps are worse than the re-education camps. It seems that typically there's more of an exit path from the re-education camps if you sort of comply and are, you know, doing what you're asked. Can you talk about the relationship between these two kind of levels that exist there?
Certainly. So there are more levels now. The system has expanded since I wrote the book. So the lowest level is just, they call it a re-education center. The formal name is Re-Education and Training Center. And this is a place where you'll be summoned there as a Uyghur person to undergo, you know, patriotic lessons, to study law and civics and all that sort of thing. And then after you, you know, show, you might go for like 2 years for a class, and you can go home every day, maybe at 6 p.m. to see your family, or maybe go home for the weekends, but you have to stay there a certain amount of time. That's one of the lower levels. If you're deemed a more serious threat, then you're kicked up to what is called a detention center. And a detention center is just a euphemism for a fully loaded concentration camp. That's where they have the guard dogs and the SWAT teams and the guard posts and, you know, snipers up there watching everyone. These places are truly terrifying. I haven't been able to personally visit one, and obviously it wouldn't be, you know, something you can just drop in and you know, report on, gather information on. But I was able to gather, I interviewed more than 100 Uyghurs who had been through these camps, who had managed to get out, you know, through various means. And just the stories they told were absolutely terrifying. I mean, this is something different altogether from the atrocities that we saw in the 20th century. The 20th century was the age of genocide. It was the age of the big camps where they had mass graves of Auschwitz, of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. The mass killings of men, women, and children. That was truly a terrifying time to be alive in a lot of places. When it comes to Xinjiang and China in the 21st century, in the year 2022 now, we're seeing the evolution of new forms of mass surveillance and mass atrocities. The Chinese nation, the government, has perfected ways of controlling people, of finding ways to control their identity, to try to brainwash them into being someone else without actually outright, you know, killing them. They don't pull out a gun and shoot you and put you in a mass grave. They don't have a gas chamber. They manage to erase your identity, erase your culture, and to essentially commit genocide through the use of overhanded technology.
So there is a movement that, oh man, it's like hard to even know how to do this justice in bringing it up. There are some who are increasingly denying to different degrees that this is even taking place. Now, there are some who say it's not a genocide. They don't necessarily deny some elements of what you're saying, but you're saying people aren't really being wholesale killed. That part's not going on, although what's going on isn't good. There's others who are making claims like the messengers, presumably some of the people you spoke to, are people who are making up these stories to either attack the Chinese Communist Party because they are anti-communist or whatever. I don't want to too narrowly characterize where this comes from, but in the U.S., it does seem to be folks who, generally speaking, are more sympathetic to not only the Chinese Communist Party, but to the politics of the Hugo Chavez Maduro type regimes in Venezuela. There seems to be sort of like a being in league there. I can't adjudicate every single claim, but can you talk a little bit about the origins of this and whether there's any aspect of it that we should be paying attention to specifically?
We know without any doubt whatsoever by now that these atrocities are happening, that the camps exist. We have full documentation. We have satellite imagery. We have thousands upon thousands of testimony from refugees, many of which line up. In my case, I interviewed 168 people, including not just refugees, but people who were inside the system, who actually worked for the Chinese technology companies building these systems. We went through Chinese corporate records, even Chinese companies that build these systems. They like to brag. They're proud of what they do. They don't see it as something shameful or worth hiding. They've admitted to it openly in the Chinese language. If you can read Mandarin, you can find corporate reports that talk about what they're doing in Xinjiang. There are no secrets anymore to what's going on. And it's really unfortunate that, in the States in particular, or just in the Western world, there are people, they tend to be more on the left, on the hard left, who they think that you have to choose. The reasoning goes that you have to choose one or the other. If you side with the United States of America, then you are an imperialist, colonialist bastard who's just trying to oppress China, trying to oppress, global non-aligned, you know, people of color movements. That's sort of how they frame it. So therefore, the idea you should be sympathetic to China and see these, you know, these accusations of genocide, these camps, therefore, they must be made up by this, you know, this American imperialist system. These evil conservatives are just making up stuff to smear China, to justify a war against China. You know, that's, it's just, you know, it's outright denialism. And it's really unfortunate that some of the, these sort of these leftists, these hard leftists and socialists who claim to uphold progressive values, you know, at home, they talk about social justice. And then when it comes to, you know, minorities overseas in other countries, they're on the side of an authoritarian regime. So the term tanky, and it just so I don't know if you've heard that term tanky, but
yeah, I've said before, I because it has such a pejorative connotation, I tend to call it the revolutionary left. And this is as someone on the left who considers myself a progressive. I've chosen that term, but certainly tanky is a term I'm familiar with.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I would consider myself kind of a progressive centrist. You know, I support human rights around the world. You know, there are also people on the other side, too, on the right, who, you know, just have these crazy, crazy views about, you know, the Chinese global conspiracy taking over the world. So, you know, it's unfortunate that this particular topic gets polarized when there are major human rights atrocities happening.
What about more specific? So that gives us a great kind of general orientation. What about the more narrow claim that a lot of what is being described is absolutely happening? You can't deny the surveillance, the satellite surveillance, all that, but that there is not genocide taking place.
So the genocide question is a separate question, and that falls under the international law of genocide. So here's the thing about the genocide question. One of the major problems that needs to be, one of the things that needs to be established is the intent to commit genocide. Chinese officials defend themselves by arguing that they are not committing genocide. They are simply developing the region. They claim that they're trying to lessen birth rates. They don't want, you know, they want family planning. And when they defend themselves that way, that places these projects in a different kind of framework, and that's what makes it more difficult to prove that this is actually a genocide. Now, under international law, the one major factor that would make this a genocide, that numerous academics and scholars have documented well, is the forced sterilization of women. The forced sterilization in an attempt to erase an entire people, to erase the next generation. It's and that is really, you know, I think that if there's going to be that one, you know, kind of that one turning point within international law, that one thing, that's going to be the thing that will define this as genocide in the future.
The book is The Perfect Police State. We've been speaking with the author, Jeffrey Kane. I so appreciate your time today and really recommend the book to anybody who's interested in this topic or isn't yet interested, but really should be. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, David.
All right. I was not initially going to do this story. So many of you wrote to me about it that I'm going to do it. But I want to again mention that there's a lot going on right now with Ron DeSantis. His wife is in cancer treatment, and I just want to be careful with this story. The backstory on this is that Ron DeSantis, the Republican Florida governor who maybe mismanaged COVID more than any other governor in the country, at least up there in the top five, basically went missing publicly for 2 weeks. On December 17th, a bagel place in Ocala, Florida, posted a picture of DeSantis being there. DeSantis was then missing from the public for 13 days. On December 30th, posted a picture from that same bagel place, the same picture saying, go get bagels. But at that point, we knew that picture was almost 2 weeks old. So it didn't really allay concerns about where is he. And the speculation was, did he have COVID and he had to go out of the public eye for some period of time because he didn't want to publicly admit that he had COVID? It was speculative, without a doubt. Then it was stated, no. Ron DeSantis was busy going to his wife's cancer treatment, completely legitimate, except the statement was that that was only on December 29th. It doesn't really explain his 12 days of absence dating back to December 17th. On New Year's Eve, DeSantis surfaced at a big concert with his wife, who, again, is immunocompromised. She's undergoing cancer treatment. No masks. Very, very dangerous thing to do. And the speculation continued to be, was DeSantis hiding COVID for that period of time? A video has now been released from yesterday in which Ron DeSantis, something is very wrong with Ron DeSantis. His voice is quivering. He's out of breath. He's struggling to breathe, kind of like Trump when Trump, remember when Trump left the hospital with COVID and he defiantly took off his mask. And then you could see Trump really, really struggling to breathe. It's a similar thing with DeSantis, but at the same time, he kind of seems almost in tears. And maybe there was a setback with his wife's treatment. So let's take a look at it. And I don't know what's going on. This could be the additional evidence that he's been hiding COVID. Could be that his wife had a bad treatment day or a setback. I don't know, but let's take a look and let's take a listen.
By Dane Eagle, who's our Florida DEO secretary. We also have Chancellor Henry Mack from the Florida Department of Education.
So this part is more COVID-like, which is when you speak. Speaking is more effort than people might realize. And a lot of times with COVID, it's this having to really labor each breath to keep speaking. So far, later, it seems more like he's almost crying.
Brad Ferguson, Senior VP and General Manager, SkyWater Florida, and Dale Miller, Site Director, SkyWater Florida, as well as Representative Fred Hawkins. Manufacturing is something that we need to
And you can hear that breath. Is, you know, the multiple short breaths to try to keep up with the oxygen he needs.
Better job of. And we've worked really hard in Florida to have more opportunities with vocational education. We have expanded our manufacturing footprint in the state of Florida, and we want to continue to be able to do that as we go forward.
So now is where it starts shifting into. It's not just the trouble breathing. He starts to sound on the verge of tears.
Semiconductors are a huge issue. If you look at how the supply chain works, we are overly dependent on foreign nations, including Taiwan, which is a good ally of ours, but which is one that, which is one that is under really serious pressure from the Communist Party of China. And so we have an opportunity to do more here in the United States. And I think the more we can do manufacturing of semiconductors here, the better off we'll be. So today, I'm proud to be awarding $6 million to build infrastructure that will connect Southern Osceola County to the emerging Neo City Technology District. This district is already home to six companies, including SkyWater Technology, a U.S.-owned and operated semiconductor foundry. While this award will support nearly 5,400 jobs, Osceola County officials estimate that this could lead to tens of thousands of jobs once it's fully developed as Osceola County continues to grow. I'm also awarding Valencia College with $3.7 million to create new programs that focus on workforce training for chip and semiconductor industries. Through this program, students will be able to be certified in operating, repairing, and designing the robots that are used to create semiconductors in just 14 weeks. Valencia estimates that in the first 2 years, 120 people will be able to graduate and immediately find work at the Neo City Technology District.
All right. So listen, I mean, I want to be careful with this. His wife has cancer. It would be logical to be crying if her treatment weren't going well. But we don't know what this is. Certainly, you know, the backstory, he's missing 2 weeks, posts a picture that's 2 weeks old to show that he's actually out there. Says he was accompanying his wife to cancer treatment, but that apparently was only on one day, 12 days in, and then reappears using accessory muscles to breathe and taking these short gasping breaths and just having a it's all weird. It's all really weird. And it reminds me of Trump on the White House balcony after taking off the mask and breathing like that. And we know why we know what the reason was for Trump doing that. So are we ever going to get the truth? I don't know. Is it reasonable to think that DeSantis would hide COVID if that's what he had? Yes, absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. And this was there was the idea of hiding Trump's COVID as well. And it became impossible. It was just, it's not going to be possible once the facts became known of how serious it was, once the reality sort of set in. But absolutely, DeSantis would hide COVID. Is that what this is? I don't really know. As we continue to follow the work of the January 6th House Investigation Committee, Special Select Committee, it is starting to reach further and further and further into MAGA land. And the news now is that MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell says his phone records have been subpoenaed by the House committee. It is now reaching Pillow. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell says his phone records have been subpoenaed by the House committee investigating the January 6th riot at the Capitol. I wasn't there on January 6th. And yes, they did subpoena my phone records, but we filed a complaint for declaratory and injunctive relief against the committee and Verizon to completely invalidate this corrupt subpoena, Lindell said in a text message to CNBC. The revelation came after CNBC reported last month that Lindell has spent $25 million since Election Day 2020 to push false claims of election fraud. We know that Pillow was at the White House in that very, very crazy period during which they were trying to come up with any way to steal this election from the guy who actually won it, Joe Biden. And my Pillow CEO, Mike Lindell, known to many of us lovingly as Mike Pillow or just Pillow, is now embroiled in this investigation. Meanwhile, Pillow does seem to be losing confidence that he's going to get Donald Trump reinstated. You know, all of 2020 and even 2020, I'm sorry, the end of 2020 and all of 2021, he kept saying Trump's going to be back by January, March, April, by Thanksgiving, by the end of the year. He was asked just a couple days ago by right wing host Eric Metaxas, I'm sorry, Metaxas, if Joe Biden will be out by the end of 2022, and Pillow is not sounding as confident anymore. Take a listen to this.
I'm talking right now to our friend Mike Lindell. Mike, do you have confidence, before we go into these five things, you mentioned one and two, do you believe that in this calendar year of 2022, Biden will leave office?
That'd be subjective. I pray for that.
Now, listen, I'm praying against it. So the prayer cancels out and I guess we'll have to go with the courts or something like that. This is the least optimistic that Pillow has been. And even in his interview with me, he was insisting it's all going to happen. It's all going to happen. It's all going to happen. So a deflated Mike Pillow. Here is Mike Pillow also just a couple days ago, saying his new thing is trying to get different voting locales to change the voting machines that they use on his recommendation. It's like, dude, you make pillows, not voting machines.
Oh, we're doing this. And what we're doing, we have teams, all these grassroots. They will be approached.
By the way, is that a Minnesota accent? Grassroots? That is just, I think I'm going to adopt that. I like that.
They're county commissioners who make the decisions whether to use Dominion or ES&S, Hart, they're all the same. Okay. They also can make the decision to not use the machines. Remember, all the machines are defective, everybody. It's like a defective, it's like bad brakes on your car.
I want to remind you, because it's important to stay in compliance on YouTube, it is not true that all voting machines used in 2020 are defective. There is no evidence of that.
They don't work for what they were intended to. If you're a county commissioner out there right now, you know what? You can say bye-bye, machines. You know, remember, we, the public, paid for those machines. The American people paid for those machines. And you know what? We don't want them anymore. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. You go to these counties, Eric, as we're doing it and saying, hey, we don't want these machines. We have a great replacement. It's 50 times cheaper, whatever it is. And here's the technology. And you know what? It works, Eric.
Yeah. So there it is. Now, as crazy as it is to take voting machine recommendations from a Pillow guy, there are probably some county commissioners who will do it. And so we've got to be watching out for that. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here is a voicemail with a different perspective on COVID. At this point, I don't know if this is serious or a satire.
So as we begin the third year of COVID, I realized that COVID can't be real. This is just the new version of the Truman Show.
Right.
And eventually, we're going to figure out it was all just a TV show. Thanks. You do a great job. Have a good day.
I assume that it's a satire, but The Truman Show, a fantastic film starring Jim Carrey, in which he doesn't know that he has been raised in a television program, and the real world population is watching it. And I mean, listen, I am open to the idea that we're living in a simulation. I don't know that COVID is that proof. I'll just leave it at that. We've got a great bonus show for you today. We will talk about Karl Rove saying, hey, these Republicans, they got to just go hard against the Trump rioters. This is not something you want to mess around with. We will talk about the ethical and legal questions surrounding Sean Hannity and his text messages related to the Trump riots. And we will talk about, you know, I know it's 2022. Maricopa County, Arizona officials are finally ready to say the 2020 election is over. They seem ready to say we're not going to get Arizona flipped from Joe Biden to Donald Trump. They're accepting it now in January of 2022. All of those stories and more on today's bonus show. Sign up at joinpacman.com.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound. From way out.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beat.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Thank you. folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Those who stormed this Capitol, and those who instigated and incited, and those who called on them to do so, held a dagger at the throat of America, at American democracy.
On the first anniversary of the January 6th Capitol insurrection, President Biden denounced his predecessor, Donald Trump, for spreading a web of lies about the 2020 election and inciting his supporters to attack the Capitol. We hear part of Biden's speech and speak to historian Ruth Ben-Bigiat, a leading scholar on fascism. Then to Sudan. Three protesters were killed in Sudan Thursday, bringing to 60 the total number killed since October's military coup. We'll go to Khartoum for the latest. And we speak to New York emergency room Dr. Craig Spencer on the skyrocketing number of COVID cases. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden marked the first anniversary of the January 6th Capitol insurrection by denouncing Donald Trump for inciting his supporters to attack the Capitol in an effort to overturn the 2020 election. In a speech from Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol, Biden accused Trump of spreading a web of lies and claimed the former president, whom he did not name, is placing a dagger at the throat of American democracy.
For the first time in our history, the president had not just lost an election, he tried to prevent the peaceful transfer of power as a violent mob breached the Capitol. But they failed. They failed. And on this day of remembrance, we must make sure that such attack never, never happens again.
Inside the House chamber, Speaker Nancy Pelosi led a moment of silence to open a congressional ceremony marking the anniversary of the Capitol assault. Just two Republicans joined the proceeding, Congressmember Liz Cheney of Wyoming and her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney. After headlines, we'll hear extended remarks from Biden's address and speak with an expert on the psychology of authoritarianism. U.S. coronavirus infections have set another record high, with the number of confirmed cases now averaging more than 610,000 a day. Hospitalizations are rising sharply, while an average of more than 1,400 U.S. residents are dying of COVID-19 each day. The Washington Post reports the White House is finalizing plans with the U.S. Postal Service to deliver 500 million free coronavirus test kits to households that request them. This comes as USPS is asking for a temporary waiver on vaccine requirements for its own 650,000 workers, saying the rule threatens to delay mail deliveries. The White House said Thursday it has no plans to grant the waiver. Today, the Supreme Court hears oral arguments in two challenges to President Biden's vaccine mandates affecting nearly 100 million workers. The World Health Organization says governments logged a record 9.5 million coronavirus infections around the globe last week, a 71% jump from the prior week. On Thursday, World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus confirmed reports that the fast-spreading Omicron variant is less likely to produce severe disease, but warned it should not be categorized as a mild virus.
Just like previous variants,